This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you? It is early morning in Hamburg, but it looks like it's going to be a sunny day. So that's good. Sunshine's back. What more can you want?
So it's the first day of spring tomorrow in Australia, Nikki. So does that mean for you it's the first day of autumn?
I don't know, because since I moved to the Northern Hemisphere, I find it very bizarre because they start seasons on the 21st or the 22nd of the month.
Oh, really?
They take all this Celtic thing very seriously. I used to say it's the 1st of September, it's the first day of spring or the first day of fall. No, it's not. No. Let me Google that and share it with the group later. But I'm not sure if tomorrow is the first day of autumn, but could be.
Must be getting close. Well, it's also the last day of G's radiation and low-dose chemo. Yay. Tomorrow, Nikki.
That's much more important.
It is a big
much
thing.
More important.
Yes, and I think quite significant. First day of spring, last day of having yucky things put into your body, beginning of a whole new chapter. Now we just have to work on getting him better. He's really struggling this week. He's in a lot of pain, but nothing that a few weeks of, you know, rest and recuperation. Why can't I say that word, recuperation?
Because we've got a lot going on. So let's no, because what else you did this week, which you've shared with in your Instagram stories, which was super lovely, was and super lovely for us to look at, but obviously very difficult for you to do, was to move your parents out of their family home.
Oh, yeah.
Out of your family home.
Yeah. It was, do you know what? It was super lovely. It was really difficult and very, when my mum actually wrote a little thank you note on Facebook to my sister and I and to her best friend, Jenny, to say, you know, how they couldn't have done it without us. And I said to mum, I feel that the term emotional roller coaster was written for that exact situation. So it was, I did put it on my Instagram, Nikki, and that was part of my four fat things, was to do more Instagram stories and more writing, you know, more sharing in that way. So I did, but what I've really struggled with is I couldn't stop crying. I had to keep stopping it going, okay, do it again, but don't cry this time. But yes, it was a really cathartic experience because my parents have got one of those big old farmhouses. You know, it's their corridor is sort of two people can sort of stand with their arms wide apart, you know, and not touch the walls, with those big Jarrah floorboards and lovely big ceilings. It's just it's a beautiful old home. And but the thing is, when you move out, you've got to clean it. And so I have washed every wall. I have wiped every skirting board. I have vacuumed every carpet. I've been inside every cupboard. And it's actually a really good way to realize that, yes, it was time for your parents to move because it is just too much work for an older couple to do. But it's a really lovely way to say goodbye to a house because you feel like you are saying goodbye from the back to the front, do you know, as you make your way down, sort of cleaning every room.
And by the end, you're like, okay, I'm out of here.
Exactly. Exactly. By the end of it, you're like, I'm not doing this again, ever. So it was beautiful. And you know, I had just been going back and forth to my mum and dad's for the last, you know, few months that we've been here in Australia, because of course I usually live in Qatar, and now we're back in Oz, and I just the tears, just crying all the time about, you know, the moving and the change. And, you know, there's quite a few things going on with my parents at the moment. And it was just so emotional. But I actually did feel at the end of it, no, I'm good. This is okay. And my mum was exactly the same after weeks and weeks of tears and tears and tears of, you know, having to move and not being sure about it all. She said the same thing because she literally handed over the keys to the new owners, and they have two small children and the wife is pregnant, and they are fit and young and lovely and so, so excited to have that house. Like, it's their dream house. It was exactly the house they wanted. And so it's really beautiful. You go, well, now that the house is kind of moving on to the next story. So, you know, that's what's meant to happen.
Tell me, all those walls you washed, do you think they're going to paint them?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely I do. I know they are.
Pull up the carpets, you know, that you vacuumed.
Yep. Yep. I made like this manic last minute drive to the supermarket to get three different types of bloody carpet cleaner. And my sister, I know that they will be pulling up the carpet because it's in my, and of course, you know, my parents are of an age, do you know, where I think you do a lot of redecorating. They completely redid the house 30 years ago when they moved in. And so there are a lot of things in there that you go, that pale blue carpet really needs to go. And those blue Venetian blinds will be ripped down before. Yeah, a blue Venetian in their bedroom. You know, all the beautiful old stuff that will all stay. And I really marvelled. I tell you, as someone who's built a brand new house a couple of years ago, it did make me kind of fall in love again with old homes. You forget that there is something, isn't there, about the old country homestead.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so let's move on to our fat questions.
Yes.
Kirsty, now we were going to record this yesterday and in the end we didn't because Sundays. Mm-hmm. So it was a good plan. So, but I already had my questions ready to go. And just as I, last night as I was going to sleep, I saw something pop up in the group and I said, this is exactly the question I'm going to talk to Kirsty about tomorrow because it's something that's really impacting me right now. And it's about communication through masks. Suddenly my German has regressed. You know, like I can't understand. Communication is difficult in a second language. You need a lot more clues and cues than you need in your native language. You can't, people can't mumble. You have to be switched on the whole time. And to have someone then put a mask over their face and speak to you, it is really tough. And it's tough for me to speak back for some reason, even though I can't see my own face, to speak the words I need to speak back, also harder to find and to get. And we talk about how, you know, we're going through this time and it gives us an appreciation of other people and other things and different ways of doing things, and we're going to be slower and our life was all too fast and it's going to be slower when we go back. But will we remember these things? Will we remember how freaking hard it is to communicate in a second? I mean, we've talked before about how if you have a second language and you're not fluent, you can't be funny. You know, you can't have your own personality because you don't have all the quips and the slang and all the things that you use to make yourself you. But add a mask to that and it's so much harder.
It is. And I imagine when not only harder but just so tiring. Like really, really exhausting to get through a day. And it's also, you know, you're absolutely right with we get all those visual clues from people with their smiles. And when you're feeling quite nervous about, oh, my God, I don't know how to say this and I'm at the doctor's surgery and I don't know quite how to ask for what I want to ask or whatever, you know, giving that big smile and the whatever. I mean, they call it the smize, don't they, that you've got to learn how to smile with your eyes. Yeah. Are you practicing your smize?
I'm pretty good. And you know, when you're learning a language and you do things like my interactions are, you know, I've always said it's harder on the phone and it's just like talking to people on the phone the whole time. And it's so much harder on the phone than it is face to face because of all those cues. And so it's almost like you're talking to people on the phone all the time, which is incredibly draining. And I find it really tough. And you expect you go and you have an interaction in a supermarket or at a bakery and you almost expect what they're going to say back to you, and you prepare in your mind what you will say. It's when you're learning a language, it's that kind of thing. You have to have your mind switched on. But when they don't say back what you think they're going to say, and you haven't been looking at their mouth, like their whole face, it's really hard. You sort of, sorry, can you say that again? Like, it's just, I find it so hard. Like a regular interaction seems really easy, but anything beyond that, it's just been so tough. And then in the group, someone posted last night and said, is anyone feeling like they're an idiot because they're dealing in their second, third or fourth language? I said, well, I'm dealing in my one and a half language. Like, I don't have a second, third or fourth language. But the other thing they were saying is people are saying, oh, they have bad connections on Zoom, which means they haven't had a shower or brushed their hair, and so they don't put their camera on. And again, it takes off any clues or cues you get by seeing someone in a meeting on a camera. So that wearing a mask is the equivalent to bad connection on Zoom, because it's equally difficult to interact with those situations. Quite topical for me.
Yes, Nikki, my question for you, is it only Australian expats that are being left stranded, or is it all expats? And Nikki, why can't Australian expats get home? Now, I need to say before I ask you this, you and I both know there are many reasons, but I want to know what people think and what you think is the real reason why Australians can't get home at the moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, so many out there, Kirstie, and you have to say that the bottom of it is there's a government that thinks they're doing the right thing in trying to protect the country while selling a political line that's going to get them re-elected at some future stage. That's, I think, is the bottom line. And I think...
So does this mean, Nikki, sorry to interrupt you, I asked you for your opinion, now I'm going to interrupt you, but do you think this means that the Australian government hasn't communicated properly on why Australians can't get home? Because if you were to ask a room full of Australian expats, like I have, why can't you get home? They will all give you a different reason on why they think they can't.
Well, I think if you belong to any Australian consular Facebook group or social media group, they're constantly communicating. But they're not calling you returning Australians. Yep. They're calling you international travellers. And it's part of the language. It's the language is they want you to be the other, because they're too busy dealing with the things at home. We have talked about this on different occasions, and we have similar yet different opinions. And look, I think this is an unprecedented event in the world, and Australia is an island and New Zealand has a similar status and has been able to deal with things. So the way we're doing it in Europe is very different to the way Australia is doing it, because Australia can do it differently. In Europe, if every time you jumped a border you had to go into 2 weeks quarantine in a hotel, it would almost be too difficult because the borders are porous and you don't have to cross a border on a road. You can cross a border on a track or a bike or, in a night in stealth gear. You can't really do that in Australia. To come into Australia, the majority of the time you come on an aeroplane and you land at an airport where there are people and officials that can let you in it or out and have that conversation with you. So, look, my husband and I have very different views about this as well, but I think I stand by what I said. The Australian government set out to do the right thing by their citizens that are at home and abroad. If you belong to a consular website, they will tell you international travellers are capped. It doesn't really say why. It just says to manage quarantine. And so we have to take the managed quarantine, but there's a lot of communication. But I think that initially, if you were an overseas Australian and you talked to people in Australia, they would say you can't come because you will bring the virus, even if I don't have the virus. And so, and that's how the virus gets in, you know, as it wasn't there and it came from people coming from overseas. So that's where you got to draw that line as a line in the sand where it started.
Yeah, but that doesn't make sense either, because yes, you may have the virus or whatever, but Australia will put you in quarantine for 2 weeks when you get there, right? So they've been doing that. So we can't say, oh, they're not letting you in because you might have the virus, you might give it to everyone. Is it that they can't, because, and just to explain to everybody, what's happening at the moment is they've capped the numbers of people that are coming in. And the thing is, you pay for your own quarantine. So, Nikki, if you were to fly into Australia right now, you would pay up to $5,000 for your 14 days in quarantine. But when you go, okay, well,
if I could fly into Australia. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, at the moment there's no tickets until November if you have a look at through the groups around town. And there are people that if you belong to any quarantine group or any returning group where mm-hmm. you see what's happening, there are people booking flights. They have to ring the airline every day yes. to make sure their flight isn't cancelled.
Yes.
And then sometimes they're told, well, there's 50 people on that flight. And, you know, there can only be 35 at the end of the day. So obviously people are, airlines have overbooked flights since the beginning of time, but this is a little bit different on the numbers. People are losing, you know, their jobs, their houses, their accommodation, their visa status. Mm. And just the level of stress that this is putting on people is incredible.
Absolutely.
But I understand. And I can see it from an outsider's point of view because I'm outside Australia and yes. I understand how horrific it looks and it feels. And if we go back to, you know, getting every speech up and the government said, if you're Australian and you need to come home, you should come home now. And that's what they said in March.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, if you have somewhere to live and a job and you are safe where you are, then you should consider staying where you are because – you know, if you're going to come home and be unemployed and have nowhere to live, then that's difficult. I mean, they didn't say those words, but that was the outcome. Mm. So a lot of Australians, including us, who don't have any place to live in Australia, we would have had to go and stay with family members, which would have made that a risk to them, one imagines.
And you would have had to quit your jobs and
quit our jobs and any sort of financial stability that we had. So we decided to stay. Now we are so far lucky in that we have still got our jobs and we're still, you know, we are still all healthy and everything's fine. But there are Australians in lots of different places who are in very different conditions to us and very different situations to us. And they are desperately trying to get home and it is very difficult watching them and hearing about their situations and seeing that. And look, I other countries are the same. New Zealand is very hard to get into mostly because you have to go through Australia to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of places aren't letting other people in. So, but they are letting their country, you know, passport holders in. So it is very hard when the only place you can live and hold a passport for and you can't get in, I can totally understand the frustration and why people are, you know, feel so strongly about it.
And what it seems, Nikki, is that there is X amount of hotel rooms and X amount of accommodation and that you let, you know, 60 to 120 people in per day and that hotel is eventually full and then each day X amount of people check out of the hotel and X amount of people check in and that so that they have a cap on their numbers because, I mean, there's a whole another story going on with then the integrity of airlines and what airlines are doing because then airlines are saying, oh, okay, well, if we're only going to let, you know, 60 people on this flight, we're filling up business class first and the business class people get to fly first and if anyone gets bumped it's going to be economy and you know we're hearing all sorts of awful stories of people that have got no chance of getting home or people that have paid $18,000 for a ticket I read recently from the UK where the husband and wife had decided okay they would literally go into debt and max out their credit cards and paid $18,000 for a ticket and because they were two different credit cards. They were seen as two different bookings and they bumped one but kept the other. Just shocking.
Yeah, it's just there are two difficult stories, but it's just it's not the airlines. You can understand the airlines are a business.
Absolutely.
And that's what they're doing. And where's Australia's airline? not flying.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you can, and this, it goes round in circles. The airlines point to the government points to the airlines point to the government. It's perfect. Yeah. It's a perfect circle.
Yeah.
And so it's very, very difficult. And, you know, Australia did send charter flights to countries to bring people home. They did it in India because there are some countries like India who closed the airspace and so no one could get in and out. So the only way to do that was had to have a government flight, and the government negotiated that and got in and got out. I mean, the fact that we're even talking about this is mind-blowing.
Yes.
To 6 months ago, you know, in our post-Christmas haze when I was fresh from Australia with my tan and feeling good and I still had, a, you know, Tim Tams and Twisties in the pantry. I mean, really, it's just mind-blowing that this is the conversation we're having, you know, 6 months later. Well,
yeah, I thought, Nikki, it was interesting before you were saying about the thing with Europe is you can cross the border anywhere and it's fluid. I mean, the same goes for Australia, and we have border controls here in Australia, but there are police patrolling those borders and the Australian Defence Force as well. And on a daily basis, you will see that, you know, Ted and Rob have hopped in their ute and decided they were going to go cross country, and the police or the Defence Force have stopped them. So, I mean, I think Germany as a whole could pretty much do that, couldn't they, with someone?
Could learn something yeah. from the Australians. What are they doing? Are they using drones? I mean, how are they catching the people going cross country?
You know? No, it's fascinating. And the stories you hear, you know, because I live in an area, my parents live in an area that's, you know, really close to the Victorian border. And so, you know, we have friends and we know people that have properties that sort of go along the Victorian border. And they said it's bizarre. And they said quite often it's the grey nomads, you know, the older people that are breaking the rules, the people who have been on their big caravan trip, and they're like, no, well, we had scheduled that in, you know, August we were going to drive to wherever, and so we will find a way. And they're out there unhooking their caravans and driving down side roads and trying to get across.
But see, the thing in Australia and the thing almost everywhere is your number plate's going to give you away, isn't it?
Mm.
Because your number plate shows where you're from. I mean, during the severe lockdown here in Germany, I was driving a car with Danish number plates, and I had more than one person yell things at me out a window saying, I assume, what are you doing here, you stupid Danish person?
But you couldn't understand them because they were wearing a mask, right?
Anyway, okay. We should move on. That was one question. Yeah.
So in a nutshell, we don't know the answer. We really don't know the answer of why Australians. We can tell you all the different reasons that maybe it's because people, you know, at the moment the Australian government is subsidising people on something they call JobKeeper and JobSeeker, you know, to keep people employed or to make sure that they have money. I've had some Australian expats say that if the 100,000 Australian expats came home all at once that they wouldn't be able to subsidise them. I don't agree so much with that. I can't see that that would be the case with all Aussie expats. I do think that there is something in the fact that I think you're absolutely right, Nikki, when you say that it's politically in your favour probably to look like you've got a hard stance on international travel, because obviously in Australia the only way that COVID seems to be coming in is from people from outside of Australia. But I also think there is something with hotels and maximum capacity with hotels and having the correct amount of staff to look after those hotels and maintain it, because we haven't really done a great job of doing quarantine in Australia. That's why Melbourne is where it's at the moment. They know that all of their clusters come from hotel quarantine, where people either got out or went out or did what they weren't meant to do. So maybe that's it. They're just scared as well. But and then we have the complication of the airlines jumping in. Okay, Nikki, next question. Now, you know that you will be moving in June 2021. You're going from Hamburg to Copenhagen, where your husband is now. When do you start to move into shift mode? Like, when does the car get sold? What have you started doing to get your head around it?
Well, Kirsty, it's interesting you should ask this question. I would just wonder, has my husband been messaging you? Because he keeps saying to me, you're not there yet. Your head's not in the game. You know, you're not there yet. And I was like, it's a 12 months away. I mean, it's very rare in expat life that you know 12 months in advance you're going to be moving somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And I think that he thinks about it more obviously because he's already there and he's alone. Whereas here.
And he misses you and he's counting the days down for you to get there.
Okay, he didn't contact you because that's not something he'd say. But all right, but what I'd say is that, you know, I've still got a student in their final year of school here that I'm trying to rev up and get through that and think about, yes. You know, and he's a student that needs a high level of support, so emotional and actual organizational. So, you know, and I have to think about that and what the plan the following year looks like for him. I mean, he was going to have a gap year in Australia with family. That seems a little bit less likely now. All his friends are pursuing European-based studies, so he's really into that right now. I mean, I am there. When are we going to sell the car? We're not, because as I recently stated, we drive a car with a Danish number plate.
Oh, because, of course.
Because we're all on the one island. Well, we're not all on the one island. We're all on the one continent that you can drive around. And my husband's car is a work car, so we have it here with us. So that's one thing we won't have to do. Looking for apartments, It is really tough to find apartments in Copenhagen, and it is really expensive to find apartments in Copenhagen. So I've got the alert set up. I send things through to my husband all the time about, what about this one? We should live here. And he says, no, they're all too expensive. So what can I do?
Do you mean you and the kids won't be living in the share house with all the other people in the one room?
So we've recently, you know, I've talked a lot here and people would know that my daughter wants to pursue any other avenue than Copenhagen. But I've recently talked her into a stint in Copenhagen, that's part of my next question. So she is now interested in the apartments. And how many bedrooms will we have? I said, well, now we'll have to have one more if you're coming. So, no. look, I think you always got to, because you've got so long, you think, oh, I've got such a long time. And then you don't want it to sort of creep up on you and whatever. And things in America, when you move, you just put everything outside the front of your house. You just keep stacking up stuff beside your rubbish bin and people just take it away. Whereas in Germany, it's not the same. You have to find 65 different bins and you can only put in so many cubic meters at a time. And
so you need to start culling now. You need to start culling right now.
And it's pretty likely that we're going to move to a smaller place because the cost is more and, you know, so there's all sorts of things that I have to think about now. So, yes, we do have to think about that, and we do have to do it. It is hard to do that when you have a full-time job and you're being a single parent and you only see your partner on weekends or every second weekend, as the case may be. And when you have time with them, you want to spend time with them and relax and sort of connect. You don't want to be, let's go to the attic and go through this pile of things. So perhaps we've said, if there's another lockdown coming, which everyone thinks there might be, we've decided that we'll put that time aside to spend a couple of hours a day doing culling and sorting activities. But we'll just have to see. Look, I mean, in Germany, there are a lot of things you have to think about, and I have started making a list, which for me is uber organized. But there are things like, they don't tell you when your mobile phone plan renews. It just renews automatically. So, and then you're booked in for another 2 years. So you have to be aware when all your phone plans renew so you can give them notice to end it and all that kind of stuff. Right. So there are all these bits and pieces that are a bit extra, and also because I'm not yet fluent in German and I've had my German mask regression situation. So there's all these things that you have to be aware of. I think when you're moving from a country with a different language, you know, we did have a relocation consultant help us move here because I knew it would be difficult because Germany is very there's lots of forms and lots of processes. I mean, it's the only country I've ever lived in where you have to register where you live. So, and you have to take that piece of paper with you when you do anything, open a bank account, et cetera, to wow. show that you're registered as living in a location. So lots of things to do. Kirsty, thanks for bringing it up.
Last question.
Last question, Kirsty. Different schooling options. Mm-hmm. So online versus homeschooling versus traditional schools versus international schools. I mean, do you think people will now be more open to them in the expat world, or will bricks and mortar schools adapt or not after we return to normal? Normal in inverted commas, because what is normal, the new normal, whatever. So is this another all about Nikki question?
I'll answer your question just personally for me, and then I'll ask you about where your question's coming from. But for me, this whole experience has shown me how important it is for children to go to bricks and mortar school. I really hope I haven't offended all the homeschoolers, and can I clarify that by saying that quite often homeschoolers have their own homeschooling associations where they do get together with other children and they do go to museums and they do play sports and they do those things where they're hanging out with other kids. But I have found personally for me, because my son, we fled Qatar in March when my husband was diagnosed with cancer and we came home, he did the next few months of school virtually online, and then he's going through the process now where school goes back next week in Qatar, but he won't be able to go back because he's still going to be here and my husband's still here recovering, so he'll start school here in Australia in a month or two, and he really needs to go back and hang out with some kids. Do you know, it's been too long away from bricks and mortar school. And I think for an expat child who's moving to a new location and leaving all their friends behind and starting somewhere new, to make friends and to have connections with people, like real connections rather than just virtual connections, it's important. So if you can't do bricks and mortar school, I'd sincerely hope, if you were considering it, that you either had a shed load of siblings or you had the ability to make connections in your new home with other kids your age, rather than just be like my guy who's hanging out with mum and dad and, you know, the occasional random sort of from down the street or wherever. He gets his siblings every weekend and he is like a puppy when they come home. And it's time for him to head out into the world and you know, find his people. Now, where's your question coming from, Nikki? Come on.
Well, as we know, we've talked about moving and moving my teen who doesn't want to move, mm-hmm. and about how boarding school in Australia is a difficult option because mm-hmm. at the moment there's no way to know in terms of COVID how that's going to pan out. We've talked before about your kids starting school when they were boarding at the beginning of the year versus the middle of the year and how that works. They're also going from a northern hemisphere to a southern hemisphere system, so you're either skipping up half 6 months or skipping down 6 months, going back 6 months, that kind of thing. So I think that this is something I never would have thought of or considered before this current situation. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking about all the different options of making sure that we all leave Hamburg together, having our daughter with us, and thinking about the fact that she might go to boarding school and how that would look. And my husband and I were sitting talking and I said, what about if she comes with us to Copenhagen and we do 6 months, wait, don't laugh, homeschooling where we – say that she has to move, she comes with us, we offer the option for 6 months homeschooling, and we get, because when you move countries, maths is the big equalizer, right? You can, it doesn't matter what you know in English or languages or whatever, but it's all about your maths, right? So you have to, maths is the one thing that you're sort of ahead or behind on, and it's the trickiest to catch up often for kids. So if she did all of the relevant grade 9 maths in that 6 month period and whatever else had to be done, and then if boarding school opportunity opened up, she could start at the beginning of grade 10 in a country, and she would start with everybody else, start a year with everybody else, start when it was more able to fly. That's January 2022 we're talking about. So that to me sounded like an option. And then I thought, what are you saying, Nikki? I mean, this is nothing I would never have said before in my life. I mean, I think that sounds like a nightmare to Nikki 12 months ago. So but now that sounds like a perfectly reasonable option to me.
Yeah, so it's basically 6 months of homeschooling. Or not even that, is it? So it's September through to
It'd be August, July or August. I mean, I've said that if I've said to her, I've presented her this option, and my husband is, again, he's not big on it, but I've presented her this option. I said, this would be the deal. You would come, you would start, you wouldn't really have a summer holiday because you'd have to do 6 full months of school, and you'd have to do 12 months of a math course and other stuff. And if you've slacked on it or fell behind or it wasn't working out, you'd just have to go to the local international school. That's my side plan to join her into the local community. And she said things like, but I don't really know anyone there, so how would I play sports and what would I do? And I was thinking, this is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get her to think about how she would integrate into the local community. The easiest way to do that would be to go to school.
Yeah.
So it's part of my evil master plan.
I wish you well. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Nikki Boffitt, moving along to our four fat things. I wrote something again. I've written a couple of things now, which is making me feel good, and I've been taking photos and I shared Instagram stories. So I'm feeling like I did achieve my four fat things last week, because I really wanted to try and sort of be a bit more creative and write a few things and do things. So that was it. How did you go with riding your bike to work?
Yeah, no, Kirsty, you told me, don't say you're going to do it, Nikki, because it's raining. And I said, no, I'm going to do it. Yeah. I didn't do it. So look, I don't feel like a failure. I feel like I can stand up and say I didn't do it. And I might take that off the table and think about a new thing for next week, but while in the background still trying to really do it, because riding in the rain is pretty grim in Hamburg, I have to say, and it takes a lot of preparation time to get dressed appropriately. As Hamburgers say, there's no bad weather, there's only bad clothing.
Oh, that's so true. I agree with that as someone who lived in Canada. It's very true. And it's also layer upon layer upon layer.
That's it.
This week I'm right into doing things at the moment that I've been saying I've been going to do for, 5 years or so. One of the things I've been doing this past week is sorting out all of my photos and getting, 20 years worth of actual hard hand, pictures that you can hold on to that were processed at a photo processing shop. So I've been sorting them out. But this week I am going to update my LinkedIn profile, which I've been meaning to do for the last few years. And this will involve, Nikki, a picture, a resume update, a social media share, and a writing piece to share. So they're going to be my four things that I'm going to do this week, and I will report back next week. Are you still thinking of something that you're going to do? You haven't got a fat thing?
I'm still thinking of something because but I will watch you with awe at your four fat things. But actually, no, I'm in now. I'm in.
Right.
So we live at the top of 100 stairs, which a lot of our listeners may or may not know. I have said it a lot of times. And above us is the attic. So we live in kind of the attic because we don't have the beautiful 12-foot ceilings that our downstairs neighbors have. But above us we have the attic, which is where the storage rooms are. And now my husband and I did a few weeks ago go through our storage room and move things out. But what we did was we moved a lot of things out of the storage room and into the shared area.
Oh, no.
Because we thought we'll throw them out later. So there's a lot of stuff sitting there. So what I will do is I will, and I think, oh, every day when I go to work, I'll just take a bag or I'll take something down and that'll be fine and we'll get rid of it. And when I need to go to work, I don't have time to run up to the attic, get the thing, go around the back of our apartment building, unlock the bins because our bins are locked, put the thing in and then get back to work. Yeah. That's 5 minutes I don't have when I'm on my way to work. So I will commit to this week doing 4 trips from the attic to my bin, and I'll have to do one every day after work. And that will give me an extra set of stairs for the day. Excellent. And also perhaps get me back in good with the neighbours who, if any of them go to the attic, will think, what exploded here?
It feels so I'm good. In for that. I am digging this, Nikki. There is something about being held accountable, like saying you're going to do something out loud and actually doing it. Do you know, with the photos, they were one of those last jobs I had, you know, with the making the new study. The photos were in big plastic tubs, you know, that have just sat there for 10 years. They have sat in big plastic tubs, like from one house, then into this house, then into the back of the cupboard and whatever. Anyway, pulled them out, sorted them out. I took a photo last night, or did an Instagram story, because I'm that person now, Nikki. I'm the person who does Instagram stories. Anyway, posted an Instagram story. A girlfriend of mine, Nicole, who lives in Melbourne, sent me a note this morning. Oh, too funny. That's exactly what I'm doing. Just found photos of our 21st birthdays, blah-de-blah-de-blah. Said to me, you don't happen to remember when our mutual friend Karen got married in Perth, do you? Because I'm up to that thing. And I got to say, do you mean our mutual friend Karen, whose wedding video I found last night? Okay, Nikki, three favorite things. One of my favorite things, I'm going to have two recommendations and a bit of a hot tip for my three favorite things this week. First one is the movie Jojo Rabbit. And I know this movie's been out for a while and it won an Academy Award and everybody else has already seen it but me. I think, have you seen Jojo Rabbit?
I have not seen Jojo Rabbit.
Oh, look, it's fantastic. It's written and directed by Taika Waititi, and I've butchered his name and I'm sorry to the entire New Zealand population, who I imagine love this man because he's an absolute genius. My son Henry said when he watched it, Mum, this movie is one of the best things I have watched ever in my life, because not only is it really funny, but it's really insightful. So the idea behind Jojo Rabbit, and I don't even know how you think about this idea and then think, yes, I'm going to be able to execute this movie without causing an absolute uproar, in that it's you're having a moment where you're remembering.
I'm having a moment where I'm remembering.
Okay.
Yes.
So the premise is, yes, it's all about Hitler's Germany and children of Germany doing training to be Nazis, but at the same time living with a parent who is sympathetic to the Jewish plight, and the conflict in a child of trying to understand why then, you know, what this all means. But it's done with incredible satire, and it's, you know, that New Zealand humour where you're giggling along all the way through, and Hitler plays a role throughout, where he is the character. That is the character of Taika Waititi. And he is brilliant at it, absolutely brilliant. Anyway, it's just beautiful and lovely, and definitely one you can watch with your tween and they will understand and get it. I loved it right from the very beginning. They sort of show so they start off, I love all this, all the music used in the movie is popular music that is sung by Germans. So you're sitting there going, oh, here comes David Bowie, but it's not David Bowie, it's or it's David Bowie singing in German, or it's the Beatles singing in German. It's absolutely brilliant. But they have this screaming sensation of the Beatles singing I Want to Hold Your Hand, but it's Hitler and Germans going crazy for Hitler, showing that whole pop stardom of feel, you know, of riding a wave of popularity. It's done well. I thought it was fantastic. So yeah, go have a look. So that was one. The other one is a podcast. It's called Drive, and it's from Future Women, which I'll come back to in a minute. It's got the host is Georgie Gardner. Remember Georgie Gardner from, was it Good Morning Australia? Was it called Good Morning Australia? Not sure. I just love listening to it because she instantly relaxes you, because she speaks to really interesting and kind of accomplished women about their careers, but she also talks about how they make time for themselves and whether that's their, you know, their work, their life, their travel and their wellness tips. The interview I really enjoyed, or two that I enjoyed, one is Kelly Clinton, who works for Uber Eats. And then the other one was Rachel Griffith, the actress. So Kelly kind of talked about career progression and about how she made progression through becoming an expat and what it gave her and why it was worth taking the risk and what the risk was, because she was in Sydney and I think she may have worked for, I had a sort of quick look on LinkedIn, but I reckon she worked for one of the e-trades, like the ANZ, you know, trader apps, and then she made a move to London without a job and thought, this could be really dangerous because I'm just about to go and be a littler fish in a bigger sea. Anyway, she didn't. She did incredibly well, and she now works for Uber. And she sort of talked about it was great for a business conversation and how Uber's changing their business and the way they operate, but it was also good for a personal conversation on how, what that's meant to her and what that move is. And she's now back in Australia. And the second one I loved was Rachel Griffith, and I really identified with this. She talked about living in America and becoming a parent and sort of the anxiety of being a parent in America and what that brought to her and why she felt that anxiety was coming, because it sounds like she had a pretty tough upbringing and she didn't have a parent that she could really role model herself on, but she knew that she wasn't really capable of doing special lunch boxes and handling all the, you know, being as hands-on as some of the people around her, or not even hands-on, that's not the right expression, but being, and intense isn't the right expression, but like being as involved and on top of things as other parents seemed to be. And she said she just couldn't see a parent that kind of matched what she thought a parent looked like. And I thought as an expat that was a really interesting idea of, you know, does that happen when you go to a Germany or a Qatar or a, you know, wherever, and you get in a group of people and you think, I don't think this is how I want to parent, but all these people are parenting like this around me and I'm not sure if I can do this or if this feels right for me. Anyway, she also talked about the impact of busyness to her family, how her and her husband had to sit down and say, while our kids are doing everything from AFL football to soccer to playing the piano to doing whatever, how is this impacting us? And in the same way, Nikki, that you said, is when you're doing solo parenting, do you really want to sit in the attic with your kids on the weekend cleaning it out, or would you rather go for a walk with them in the park and connect with them in that way? Julia Gillard they used to kick off the podcast, but I really liked it, and I think if you want a lovely, soothing voice who asks great questions and has good listening skills and really interesting women, it's a great podcast to go to. And my last one is my tip. And, Nikki, I think you and I have spoken about this before when I had the drama with my hard drive, that I had the hard drive in the safe where I'd backed up and backed up and backed up in my hard drive, and then I went to play the hard drive and the hard drive didn't work. And I can't remember.
Yes, I remember.
Yes. Well, I'm now back in Australia and I've taken that hard. I've actually done another job. See, I am absolutely ticking things off my list.
You're nailing the jobs.
I'm nailing the jobs. I actually went to the data retrieval place and dropped it in where I wasn't allowed to see anyone. I had to fill out a lot of forms and leave it behind and wait to be emailed to be told because, you know, it's all very weird when you're in the land of data retrieval. But the thing about data retrieval is they totally have you by the short and curlies because what are you going to do? Yeah. You can't do anything. So I've now, you know, paid my $50 for the man to open the hard drive. And now the man has told me, Vladimir has told me that I need to pay for a $290 part to then put it in because I think that it's this specific part. And that once I've paid my $290 and they've had a look at it, which will take about 3 weeks, I have a less than 50% chance of being able to retrieve my data. So another little tip to everyone to make sure you have two hard drives in the safe that are backed up at all time, not just one, two. And if you have all of your things on CDs and DVDs like I do and you take them in and you have 39 DVDs for him to copy onto a hard drive, it will cost you $18 per DVD, which equates to $700 worth of saving your things onto a hard drive. Another little tip, if you can sort of do that as you go along as well, it's probably best. So that's been my thing this week, or else you'll find yourself on the phone to Vladimir negotiating what you can do for a cash deal.
All right, I want to hear about your three favorite things. What do you got?
Okay, so I love politics. I'm a political junkie. Mm-hmm. So I have watched the two political conventions in the US in the last 2 weeks, the DNC and the RNC. Mm-hmm. And I watched them both, no matter how painful they both were at times. But I did enjoy, not enjoy, but I was really interested in how it's a total shift from being a room full of screaming people, you know, to this sort of like it's a television production now. It's not. So one was a total shift because they announced in advance that it was all going to be sort of virtual, and the other one was going to be in real life and going to be in person. Then it wasn't. But I think really that they were planning that a bit longer than they let on to the public, because one of the things that people did say when they were critiquing them or reviewing them was that they thought there'd be a lot more stumbling blocks and items in the RNC because they shifted to a virtual at a late stage. But in fact, there was none. It was beautifully smooth television production.
Oh, wow.
It's actually produced by the survivors, the producers of Survivor.
Oh, Mark.
Because they're the people that did The Apprentice. So he's obviously the RNC has maintained a relationship with them. So, but anyway, so the messages, the spin, the production, I love it all. Even like it horrifies and appalls me, I really love it. So that's one of my favorite things. Not for everybody. Also not for everybody, my new favorite TV show, my new favorite trashy TV show. Now, it's a niche recommendation. Now, if you've ever lived in America and you've ever lived particularly in the South and particularly in the Atlanta suburbs, so I'm only speaking to a
that's very niche.
I did post it on my personal Facebook and a lot of people said, oh, yes, I've watched that and I did enjoy it. It's called Teenage Bounties. Now, I'm scraping the bottom of the Netflix barrel, Kirsty, but you know there is no new content out there. Now, I did have one friend in Australia who said, I started watching it and then I thought, children never speak to their parents like that. And I said, you've never lived in the South of America. Well, you say, yes, ma'am, to your mother. She said, people really say that? I said, yes, they do. So basically it's just, look, I mean, it popped up as a recommendation, which is an indication of the TV I do watch on Netflix. And it was just like I was transported back to Atlanta. I can't even tell you, like the strip malls and the conversations and it was funny, funny, funny. And I was tears of laughter. I'd say it's not meant to be a dramedy, but it kind of is. So Teenage Bounty Hunters for the trash TV people. So my last one is I used to listen to a podcast called Recode Decode, which with Kara Swisher, she's a legendary female tech journalist in the US. And then I realized that they're all repeats. And I was thinking, why are they all repeats? Why? And then I listened to the end one day because I don't know. When a podcast finishes, I don't listen to all the end bits after that. I just, when it's done, like, thank you for listening. Okay, bye. And then one day I was doing something, so I was listening anyway because it was in my ears. And it said, you know, this is, there's no longer, this podcast doesn't exist, but if you want to listen to Cara every week, go to Pivot, a podcast called Pivot, which is twice a week, Tuesdays and Fridays, where she talks to Scott Galloway, who's an NYU marketing professor, and they discuss the biggest stories in tech, business, and politics. I really, really enjoy listening to Cara Swisher. I find her straight up and down, like a really direct person, and I enjoy the questions she asks, and I enjoy the challenges that she makes to people that she's interviewing who try and give her like the regular answer kind of thing that she always pushes a little bit more. And so I started listening to this podcast called Pivot, which apparently has been around forever, and I am a super late adopter. But if you do enjoy, one, Cara Swisher, if you enjoy hearing about sort of tech, business, and politics, because they all do at the moment, the biggest story in tech, business, and politics is about TikTok. So they do all collide, and they are all really interlinked. So it's just a really way. And she's a very early tech journalist. So I read a Vanity Fair article about her on the weekend. So she was friends with all the people who started these massive companies when they were all tiny companies, and she would sort of just go around and hang out with Jeff Bezos and sort of shoot the breeze with him. And so she has all these contacts because she's been in the industry for years and years and years. And so she knows the personalities of the players and, you know, whatever. Anyway, big fan of that. So, and I just want to quickly say, I did try out Quibi. Now, you talked about how Quibi in Australia was, it used to cost, and now it's free. So I took it. It does cost here, but you can have a month free. You get a month free trial, and then it costs you money. But I just totally went through one night when I was cooking dinner with my headphones, the whole sex doll show. That was fantastic.
Wasn't it so good?
I really enjoyed all those episodes.
Me too. So clever. It was so clever. And how good is Anna Kendrick? I thought it was brilliant. I think is it called The Mummy? Or it's called something like that, isn't it? The sex doll one, or yes.
We'll put it up there on the show notes.
Oh, yeah. And there's some really good content on there, isn't there? I'm amazed.
There is. And I was thinking, what this is one big episode and they've just cut it down. And I thought, no, it's not. It's so distinct the way that they sort of start and end.
Yes.
And they really have made these 10-minute sections of content. Yep. And they're so distinct, but they're part of this big story arc. And it's just like a mini episode. And I was at the same time being appalled by our.
Oh, yeah, me too. But then I think, you know, that's 10 minutes. So what's the difference between scrolling mindlessly in the doctor's surgery through Facebook and watching whatever, you know, garbage gets thrown your way, or choosing something to sit in the doctor's surgery and watch, or sit in the car while you're waiting to pick up the kids, or, you know, outside sport, or whatever. I agree with you. I thought at the time, who on earth watches anything that's only 10-minute episodes? Well, the answer is me.
And me, because as we know, as I've just proven, I'll watch anything. But, you know, like, we've got to have your high-mindedness and mine is trash, because, you know, we've got to differentiate ourselves somehow, Kirsty.
Okay. All right, Nikki Moffat, it has been lovely talking to you again, and I'll see you next week.
See you then. Bye-bye. Bye.